At 10, the first session judge swept in wearing her black robe. Judge Rivera, a terrible judge, but a good break for us. You must understand, Courtroom 6B, the first session court, was a hardship post for judges. They rotated in and out of it every few months. It was the job of the first session judge to make the trains run on time, to assign cases to the other courtrooms in such a way that the workload was spread evenly, to winnow the docket by cajoling plea bargains out of reluctant ADAs and defendants, and to sort through the remaining administrative busywork on the daily docket as efficiently as possible. It was a hectic job. Delegate, dump, defer. Lourdes Rivera was 50-ish, with a frazzled demeanor and magnificently miscast as the judge to make the trains run on time. It was all she could do to get herself to court on time with her robe zipped up and her cell phone turned off. The lawyers scorned her. They grumbled about how she got the job because of her good looks or her opportune marriage to a politically connected lawyer or to plump up the number of Latinos on the bench. They called her Lardass Rivera. But we could have hardly picked a better judge that morning. Judge Rivera had been on the Superior Court bench less than 5 years, but already she had a towering reputation in the district attorney's office as a defendant's judge. Most of the judges in Cambridge had the same reputation. Soft, unrealistic, liberal. Now it seemed perfectly appropriate to load the dice that way. A liberal, it turns out, is a conservative who's been indicted. When the clerk called Jacob's case, indictment number 08-4407, Commonwealth versus Jacob Michael Barber, one count of murder in the first degree, my son was ushered in by two court officers from the lockup and made to stand in the middle of the courtroom in front of the jury box. He scanned the crowd, saw us, and immediately dropped his eyes to the floor. Embarrassed and awkward, he began to fuss with his suit and tie, which Lori had picked out for him and Klein had delivered. Jacob was not used to wearing a suit, and he seemed to feel both dapper and straitjacketed. He had already begun to outgrow the coat. Lori used to joke that he was growing so fast that at night, when the house was quiet, she could hear his bones stretching. Now he fidgeted to make the coat sit properly on his shoulders, but it would not stretch that far. From all this fidgeting, reporters would later say that Jacob was vain, that he even enjoyed his moment in the spotlight, a slur we would hear over and over when the trial actually began. The truth was, he was an awkward boy and so thoroughly terrified that he did not know where to put his hands. The wonder was that he managed to stand there with as much composure as he did. Jonathan passed through the swinging gate in the bar, laid his briefcase on the defense table, and took a position beside Jacob. He put his hand on Jacob's back, not for Jacob's benefit, but to make a point. "This boy is no monster. I am not afraid to touch him. And more, I am not simply a hired gun doing my professional duty for a distasteful client. I believe in this kid. I am his friend."